no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Before Gary joined us, we were talking, Dave, about Neil Pionk and his performance. And, you know, the question I have, I mean, he's obviously, the offensive numbers are there. The defensive game is rounding into form as well and probably exceeding everybody's expectations. You know, his contract, it's going to be a big contract coming up, you know, in this offseason. Do you think he's going to exceed what Josh Morrissey got, the 8 years and $50 million? Or is it going to be right around that dollar figure? How do you think the contract negotiations are going to shape out with between Pionk, given his latest performance?
Well, I mean, Drew, the funny part is last year, you could say, is it an anomaly? Is it a one-off? Is that just a phenomenal performance? But when you're able to keep that rolling and start to exceed your expectations, then you start to say, well, there's something there. That's not a one hit wonder. You know, this is trying to think of a good one hit wonder reference. I can't think of one, but the truth Wham. Is, yeah, but what's the song though? Was oh, that, yeah, exactly. So you got to think of the name of the song. That's the whole point.
Now you're going to make me do some Googling is what you're going to make me
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Well, I kind of expected Ezzy actually to come up with something, but anyways, it doesn't matter. The point is you got Neil Pionk, who's an RFA. So, I mean, the Jets still have a measure of control. He makes $3 million this season. And yeah, his number is going to be a big number. I mean, I just don't think there's any question about it because he really is showing that, you know, he is a solid defenseman. I don't think he's going to be making $7-8 million next year. But I definitely see that he's probably going to be, you know, in that Josh Morrissey number. And again, in terms of years, I mean, he's not an old guy, right? He's 25 years old. So he's kind of in that prime of his career. And that's what the Jets are looking to buy. So, you know, I haven't broken it down to see exactly what his number will be. But again, you've got to think that you're getting a steal right now at $3 million. And his number will be, I suspect it's got to be north of, what would you say, at least $6 million.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that high, but I would say that.
Isn't it that high then? I mean, you look at everything he's doing. He's putting up big numbers offensively. His defensive game is improving. So, you know, if he was a UFA and he's not that far away from unrestricted free agency, why wouldn't his number be, why wouldn't his number be up over $6 million? I just don't see why he's not considered maybe not elite, but not far from elite.
Well, you'd have to look at the comparables. And it's possible that his number comes in $6 million. I don't know if he's going to get an eight-year deal. Look at how young Josh Morrissey was when he signed that deal, right? It's a different type of player. Pionk wasn't drafted by the Jets. So, you know, again, that, I think he'd probably be closer to around $5 million a year. But you would have to go and look at some comparables. But there's no doubt that Neil Pionk has raised his value so far this season.
No question about that. And we'll talk more about that. But first, we're going to welcome in our next guest. It's a good friend of ours. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for crossingbroad.com. Anthony Sanfilippo joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Anthony, it's good to see you, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. You know, I didn't think we were going to have an opportunity to talk this year, you know, with you guys playing in the Canadian division and us playing in the East. I didn't think that there was going to be, you know, normally I join you guys a couple times a year when the Jets and Flyers get together, but I'm glad you guys reached out. It's cool to see you guys in person, I guess, through my computer, as opposed
Anthony,
to just talking
you can't
on the
get
phone.
Rid of us. There's no way you can get rid of us. You're I know. Stuck with us for life.
Well, I have a funny story for you real quick. You know, as you guys know, I dealt with COVID last month, and the day that I left the hospital, the orderlies wheeling me out in a wheelchair out to the car for the ride home. And as they're wheeling me out, because I spent 11 days in the hospital, the nurses played the Rocky theme as I was leaving through the sound system in the hospital. And I turned to the orderly and go, you know, I feel like I'm on Illegal Curve. And he goes, what? And then I realized who I was talking to. I said, never mind. Forget it. Never mind. But anyway,
the orderly at the hospital doesn't know about us.
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, they're too busy doing something else, like saving people's lives and then dealing with a mass pandemic than listening to us. Hard to believe.
Crazy.
But, yeah, I gotta say, Anthony, you mentioned that you dealt with COVID, and I read your story about it on crossingbroad.com, and it's so good to see you healthy and up and seemingly back at it. And I mean, it sounded like it was a harrowing experience. And well, like I said, it's so good to see you, not in person, of course. Well, soon enough, it'll be in person again.
That's right.
But, at least via the computer.
Thanks, Drew. I appreciate that. Yes, it was harrowing. The first night, especially. I mean, I was listed in critical condition that first night, but everything got better, day by day by day. And here I am 5 weeks since, and I feel, close to 100%. I got a couple small little breathing things that I still have to do. But I'd say I'm probably about 90, close to 95% at this point. And within a couple weeks, I'll be completely back to myself. So it's great. It's great to be where I'm at. And I'm fortunate. I certainly am at this juncture. So
that is good to hear. I mean, the Flyers as a franchise and as a team have certainly been going through their COVID tribulations. Yeah. And they're obviously playing in one of the Lake Tahoe games this weekend, but this is not a full strength Flyers team. If they weren't playing in this marquee game, do you think they'd be back on the ice, or do you think that maybe accelerated the timeline a little bit from the NHL's perspective?
A lot of people ask that question, and I understand it, right? I mean, because you have this big game on national television, and the league's been promoting it and stuff, but I can't imagine that the league would want a depleted roster. So I don't think that they're rushing the Flyers back just to get them into this game, mm-hmm. minus Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, Travis Konechny, Oscar Lindblom, who was a great story, obviously, that people would want to talk about and hear about nationally. So I can't imagine that the league looks at this and sees it as a bonus, right? So in that regard, I don't think that they were rushed back. I think that they got to a point where they had no more people, players or staff going into the protocol. And it was just like, okay, well, we've had several days in a row of negative tests. We can kind of get back at it. Plus, they had already lost all those games, four games. You're not going to add more to it. The schedule's a mess as it is. I mean, you guys see every day what the NHL schedule looks like. Trying to sneak more games in just because the Flyers have a number of players on that COVID list. I mean, that's what this taxi squad's for and everything else. I don't think the NHL rushed them at all. It's unfortunate that the guys are missing, but I don't think they were rushed at all.
Anthony, wanted to ask you about, James Van Riemsdyk, but also, ask you about some of the players that you feel, are going to have this opportunity with, as you mentioned, Giroux, Voracek, Travis Konechny out of the lineup. But, just first with James Van Riemsdyk, it's a player that I've always really liked. And, I think you'd agree last year, maybe there was some points of the season where he was a little bit inconsistent, but he still had, I believe, 19 goals. But this year, can you imagine how the Flyers would be doing if they didn't have James Van Riemsdyk playing at a point per game clip? Because I think he's one player that you didn't necessarily see taking a step back to, where Van Riemsdyk was maybe, 4 or 5 years ago with the Leafs.
Yeah, no, he's certainly been a surprise in that regard, but even more so, it's been that he's been great in his own end, and he's creating a lot of chances for whatever line he's playing on. And he's been a little bit of a wild card because of injuries and the like. I mean, first they were missing Couturier, and then they had other guys out of the lineup. And so Van Riemsdyk's bounced from first line to third line to second line. So he's been all over the place, and everywhere he goes, he's really taken to heart what Alain Vigneault has asked him to do, which is, look, you bust it in your own end, and then you have the freedom to be creative in the offensive end. And I think it's a really good mix right now for him. And if you watch games, there's a lot of times where he's poking pucks at the blue line and using that reach or bodying a guy off, because he's a bigger guy. He's never been known as a physical player. He's been known as a good puck possession guy because he's strong and big, but not in the defensive end. He's always kind of been a little bit more passive. he's a different player this year and by far has been their most valuable player through the first 14 games that they've played. And it's not even close. Without James Van Riemsdyk right now, the Flyers are probably not sitting tied for second in the East Division.
You know, Anthony, Winnipeg Bay show, even though we're, you know, out on the internet, but we still have to ask about Manitoba players. Got to ask about Nolan Patrick, you know, obviously after everything that happened to him last season, what does it look like for him this season?
You know, I don't know what the deal is with Nolan. I've never gotten it, Dave. I'll tell you what, I know that the Flyers, when they were talking with Winnipeg about Patrick Laine and Roslovich, I know that Patrick was part of that deal that Chuck Fletcher was offering. What I had heard, it was Patrick and Konechny for Laine and Roslovich was what I had heard. And that the Jets came back to the Flyers and said, replace one of them with Provorov and we have a deal. And Chuck Fletcher said, no, I'm not giving up Provorov. And so then, you know, they went back to Columbus at that point and then that got the deal done there. So if the Flyers are willing to move on from Nolan Patrick, now granted that's a big deal, right? I mean, it's not like it was for peanuts. It's not like they were just dumping him off. It lets you know that they're a little concerned as well. He's not been great. He's not been terrible, but here you got a guy who, with all these players out of the lineup, all these, you know, top end talent forwards out of the lineup, and Nolan Patrick's your fourth line center, right? Tells you a little bit of something about where the Flyers think that he's at right now as a player, and maybe he'll figure it out. But you know, I every time I watch him play, I wish he was using more. I think it's that he's got a lot of gifts, but he just doesn't know how to use them. He's one of those types of players, right? And that maybe he figures it out later when he's more mature, when he's late 20s, and maybe it clicks for him then because he's so talented. It's just that he doesn't at this point know how to, you know, harness those talents.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Anthony Sanfilippo. You can read Anthony's work at crossingbroad.com. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. A good friend of ours when travel happened. This certainly a night out with Anthony and Illegal Curve was usually a recipe for some hijinks at the very least.
Yes.
And I think the hijinks is probably the nicest way we can describe that. You know, Anthony, I got to, you know, down your in-state rivals, the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, there's almost, you know, you think about people who symbolize the Philadelphia Flyers, and it's Bobby Clarke comes to mind, and, you know, Ron Hextall certainly comes to mind as sure. Well. Just how bizarre is it thinking that Ron Hextall is going to be leading the Pittsburgh Penguins and presumably trying to defeat the Philadelphia Flyers on a regular basis?
So I'm going to tell you, it's really bizarre to me. I grew up in the Hextall era, right? So when I was a Flyers fan, Ron Hextall was the goalie. And so, you know, to see the first bizarre thing for me that happened with Hextall was when he was first back in Philly. We were in Detroit, and he up in the press box in Detroit, he saw Chris Chelios. And they shook hands and patted each other on the back. And I was like, a little bit of my childhood died inside of me at that point. So when I'm working now, 6 years, let's fast forward, 6-7 years ago, I'm working for the Flyers and I'm doing this video thing where we're talking about the Flyers-Penguins rivalry. And I'm talking to Hextall and he's telling me how much he hates the Penguins, how much that team bothers him so much. When he, as a player, even afterwards, it just, they drive him crazy. And now he's their general manager with Berkey, of all people, as the president of hockey operations. So it's bizarre in that sense. But it's going to be an interesting dynamic to me there because they're two completely different people. Hextall will fill that cupboard. The Penguins have no really good young talent coming, right? That cupboard's bare. So Hextall is a very good drafter, but he's really uber patient when it comes to the NHL roster, whereas Berkey's the complete opposite. Berkey will trade away anything and everything to try and win now. So I think it's going to be an interesting dichotomy between those two. And I think one of two things happens. I don't think there's a middle ground here. I think it's either wildly successful and the Penguins become a really good team again within a couple of years, or it burns down like a like an awful like it goes down like Trump Plaza did in Atlantic City the other day, right? And it just completely is a disaster. So hopefully one of those bills, two things will happen. What's that? I'm sorry.
I said hopefully the Flyers paid their bills. I'm not sure that the Atlantic City incident. Separate issues altogether.
Exactly. But no, seriously. I mean, I think that I think it's an interesting pairing. That could either be really successful or really unsuccessful.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Anthony. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about the goaltending. You know, I know Dave Minuk is probably the biggest Carter Hart fan. He picked him to win the Vezina Trophy this year, and I'm not that far behind. I really like Carter Hart. I mean, you know, he was fantastic for Team Canada at the World Juniors, and, you know, he's been fantastic for the Flyers since he jumped into the NHL. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, what you've seen from Hart early on, you know, how you think his game's grown, but also Brian Elliott, who I think you'd agree has really solidified that backup position.
Yeah. So I'm a big Carter Hart guy too. But I'm also the guy who says you got to be a little bit patient with him. He's still a young kid. He's still finding his way. I think he's going to be an excellent goaltender in the NHL for a long time, but you know, fans in Philadelphia, as nuts as they are, you know, they have him as the savior, and he's going to, you know, win them the Stanley Cup this year, and anything short of that, you know, then they're going to give him grief. And it's funny, he got off to a kind of a little bit of a slow start this season, and all of a sudden I started to see fans turning on him on social media, and I'm like, whoa, slow down. Yeah, all right, he didn't have a couple good games, but he's still the goalie, the franchise goalie moving forward. And it's great to have a guy like Brian Elliott behind him, because Elliott is a very good veteran goaltender. He's able to come in once every fifth, sixth game, whatever you need, and play well. He doesn't need a lot of reps. And when Carter had his little mini meltdown in Boston and they lost the game 6-1, he shattered his stick, goalie stick across the net, and, you know, started yelling as he was going off the ice. And, you know, everybody was asking about it. And then Vigneault made him sit like two games, and Elliott played really well those two games. Carter came back, and since he's come back, he's been excellent. He's been really, really, really good. So I think it's kind of that thing where he's got to continue to mature, continue to learn his game and grow his game. And he's that kind of kid who's committed to doing that on a not just season by season basis, on a day to day basis. And I think ultimately he'll be an excellent, excellent goalie. But while he's still figuring it out, Brian Elliott's the perfect backup.
You know, Anthony, this year obviously is a year unlike any other. And I don't know about you, but I feel like if it's not happening in the North Division, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. I mean, I actually am more localized. Like, it's really, if it's not happening with the Jets, I'm hard pressed to find out what's going on. But specifically what's going on in the North Division, is that kind of the way it is for you within the Flyers division? Is that you guys are really, everybody just seems to be focused on what's happening within division, and the peripheral NHL stuff is kind of getting lost in the shuffle for the focus?
Yeah, I think for the most part it is. I mean, you know, I admit that, you know, on an individual level, like with a lot of the stuff we do at Crossing Broad also ties into gambling. So when we're looking at NHL potential gambling stuff, I have to kind of pay attention to what's going on around the league so I can offer some suggestions in that regard. But outside of that, yes, everything is all about, I mean, there's no doubt we'd look and see what's Boston doing, what's Pittsburgh doing, what's Washington doing. That's all we care about, because you're not going to play a team from the other division until you get to the conference final. Mm-hmm. So if that's even what it's called this year, because there's no real conferences, right? Mm-hmm. It's become very parochial, for lack of a better word. Like, you only care about seven other teams at this point, and that's really it. And everything else that's going on is kind of, you know, oh, there's other hockey being played. Like, I didn't even realize it's going on. But I think I got to ask you guys, is it great up there in Canada? Cause every team is Canadian at this point. Like, is that a thing that division is like, it's awesome up in Canada right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I'll jump in, Anthony. Like, I think I speak for everyone when I say that, like, we're following the Canadian division, and probably
you never
not
speak for me, as a
okay, yeah.
Rule number one: you never speak for me.
Okay, Anthony,
I'm pretty sure that's in the Illegal Curve Constitution.
I'll speak for Dave, or maybe just myself, but yeah, there I think it's like you said, Anthony. I think, you know, we're following the Canadian division, just like, you know, Philadelphia Flyers fans or Pittsburgh Penguins fans are following their own division. But I think, you know, what has maybe stood out to, you know, Canadian team hockey fans the most is just how much drama there's been early on the season, because you have your team playing every second night, you know, sometimes, you know, back-to-back nights, but certainly you've seen a lot of, you know, 3 games in 5 days or, you know, 4 games in 7 days. And I think, you know, there's so much parity as well in this division, in addition to the other divisions, but, you know, we're based in Winnipeg. So we obviously know, you know, what's happening here, but I think, you know, for the most part, Jets fans love this because, you know, you get to see those, you know, 3 or 4 games in a row against the Flames, or you get to see, you know, a couple of games against the Oilers in a row, a couple of games against the Canucks in a row. So I think there's a lot of fans, you know, here in Canada, but also I imagine in the US that are hoping that, you know, maybe some of the teams that you've seen in this divisional realignment, maybe the NHL decides to keep those teams together.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen at the bare minimum, guys, is I think that the league is going to keep the baseball style scheduling together as much as possible for the future. Now, of course, you're going to have to play teams from the other conference, so you really can't play 2 games in their city and then have them come play 2 in yours. You only can do 1 and 1 in those. But I think that teams that you're going to play for at least 4 times, I think you're going to have a 2-game trip to that city. It saves the team's money. It's more, you know, it's more economical for the league and everything else. And I think that that's going to be a part of the future of the league. And I think it's a cool thing. I mean, I talked to Alain Vigneault about it, and he said, you know, you get to coach a little bit. I talked to Peter Laviolette about it when the Flyers played the Caps last week or 2 weeks ago now. And it's like, you know, it's very reminiscent of playoffs. Like, you install something for a team and then you make small adjustments on the day off in between against that team, as opposed to trying to watch video against a team that you haven't seen in 2-3 months and trying to figure out if your system's going to work against them. So it really kind of, I think that part of it is going to be a positive for the league moving forward.
You know, Anthony, I agree. I think it will. And I think it's, you know, it's been enjoyable. The one thing you can notice, the one element that seems to be missing, obviously, is the fans. And we saw it here when the Jets played the Flames. The Jets played the Flames 4 games in a row. And the emotional level really never ratcheted it up. Now, obviously, there's a factor of you have to win games. So you really can't afford to be taking stupid penalties. But, I mean, in a playoffs, you see guys, you see scrums, you see that element. And obviously, fans enhance that, right? You have 15,000, 20,000 people screaming, bloodlust, you know, it gets going. That's the one element that seems to be really missing. So it'll be interesting next year. Hopefully, you know, everything being healthy and able to have fans back in buildings to really, that I think will really ratchet it up, because right now you just don't have that element of, like, obviously it's important and it's fun, but do you agree? Do you see that lack of fans really missing from adding that emotional element to these games?
Yeah, I do. Because I kind of thought playing the same teams over and over again, that we would see a little bit more animosity, a little bit more rivalry between the two teams. And you see a little bit of it. You see it coming out. You can see these guys are feeling it. But they also, because there's no fans, I think that they can pull it back quicker. I think that they can stop themselves from crossing that line a little bit easier than without the fans egging them on, right? But if you put 20,000 people in the building yelling and screaming when guys start to push and shove, it could get a little bit more, you know, entertaining at that point. So I do think you're right, Dave. I think next season, if they keep that kind of baseball scheduling and you have people in the building, I think we have an opportunity to get a little bit closer to old time hockey. We're not going to go back to the days where there were fights left, right, and center, but at the same time, I do think you're going to see a little bit more physicality, a little bit more of dislike between two franchises. And I think that would be cool.
I don't think anybody would mind seeing the 2012 Penguins Flyers playoff series repeated, at least maybe not with as much blood spilled on the ice, but right, certainly the intensity of that. Anthony, we've been, you know, together for over a decade on various platforms, and we've spent a lot of time together. It is so great to see you. So great to see you healthy first and foremost. And, you know, God willing, one day we'll be able to do this in person again and tip a few back at one of our favorite watering holes and all the Absolutely. Best to you, old friend, and good to see you.
Thanks, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure. I love coming on your show. I do it anytime you guys ask. So
thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Us too. Thanks, Anthony.
There he goes. There goes Anthony Sanfilippo. You can follow Anthony's work at crossingbroad.com. Going to do a quick commercial break here, just which involves me reading, so it's not like we go anywhere. And then we're going to talk about the play of Mason Appleton and the impact that has on the Winnipeg Jets expansion plans. We got some Jets talk coming up for you right now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live. This segment of the program is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your house for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Alrighty, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show continues on. We're live here. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search for Illegal Curve Radio or Illegal Curve Hockey on YouTube. Smash that subscribe button. Get notified each and every week when we are live here on YouTube. And of course, anytime we post video from the Winnipeg Jets media availabilities, you can find that on illegalcurve.com and on our YouTube channel. While you're at it, subscribe to the podcast. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Gentlemen, at the beginning of the season, I didn't really think the Jets were going to have very many difficult decisions as it pertains to the upcoming expansion draft. I'll be honest, I didn't see Mason Appleton's ascendancy coming as it has so far this season. He's now tied his career high in goals after last night's empty netter. And sure, you might be saying, yeah, well, he's got a couple empty netters. They don't really count. The counterpoint to that is that means that Paul Maurice has enough trust in Mason Appleton to have him on the ice to maintain and hold on to leads and eventually expand them as it pertains to the empty net goals. Obviously, the Jets are going to go with a 7-3-1 format for the expansion draft. That means they'll protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie. You know, the forwards, the no-doubters are Wheeler and Scheifele, Connor and Ehlers and Dubois. You know, you could probably put Andrew Kopp into that category as well, particularly if the Jets think that they can get him signed to a longer term contract because he is a RFA at season's end. Adam Lowry, a UFA, so there's maybe not as much pressing issue to protect him in the expansion draft. So from my perspective, it comes down to a decision between Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton for that sort of final spot for the protection of Jets forwards, one to be protected, one to be exposed. If you had to pick between Appleton and Harkins, who are you protecting and who are you exposing?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, we discussed this. I don't know how long ago it was, Drew, you mentioned this. I mean, the reason why, you know, Adam Lowry might not have to be an issue is because you can have that contract in a drawer. And yes, you know that you can, after the expansion draft, you can sign Adam Lowry. So that's first and foremost, just for, you know, those people listening who don't really understand why, you know, Lowry isn't a guy that factors in here. But, you know, I've said this before. I think Jansen Harkins is a guy, you know, that I think there's a good chance that the Jets will protect. But, you know, are there two bigger bargains, especially when you're talking about Mason Appleton? Not only is Mason Appleton only making $900,000 AAV, he's under contract for one more season at $900,000 AAV. So you mentioned, Drew, you know, he's got the 10 points. You know, first off, you know, on that empty netter, what a pass by Neil Pionk, you know, to get that pass to Appleton in his own zone. Just a really crafty play. We've talked, you know, deservedly a lot about Pionk. He's playing some great hockey for the Jets right now, but I mean, you look at Appleton and you look at Harkins, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think there's some similarities in their games. And I think, you know, we could sit here, Dave, and we could argue who has the higher offensive upside. I would probably argue, you know, that it would be Jansen Harkins, but we're not exactly talking about, you know, guys that are going to be, you know, one day 60 or 70 point players. These are both guys that I think you'd agree are probably more in the, you know, that top out in the kind of 40 to 45 point range. And again, that's just my opinion, but you know, Appleton is such a great story. I mean, you know, Dave should speak to this more than I should, but you know, Appleton's a guy, you know, that has just done it the right way, similar to Jansen Harkins. But this year, clearly Appleton was almost like, why isn't anybody talking about me? Right. Because you think about Appleton, and he was always just kind of like an afterthought in terms of, you know, maybe Appleton will be on the third line, maybe on the fourth line, but he has played so well, both defensively and offensively. And how many nights off has this guy taken this year? None, in my opinion. He has been so consistent. So I back to your question, I think that, you know, Chevy and the Jets management group are absolutely going to have to, you know, decide whether it's going to be Mason Appleton or Jansen Harkins, assuming that the other forward is Andrew Kopp. And I don't think, Dave, that's going to be an easy decision for Chevy.
No. Excellent job fence sitting and not answering the question there, Mr. Ginsburg. Well, no, Dave, are you going to give me an answer? You know, if you had to pick one, you know, between Harkins and Appleton, which one are you protecting and which one are you exposing? Or as a third option, which I probably should have given to Ezzy too, but you know, so be it. Would you try and work a trade similar to what they did with the Vegas expansion draft, where you don't really lose a roster player, you swap a draft pick and have them pick, you know, in the case of Vegas, it was Chris Thorburn.
Well, I mean, yes, obviously, if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you have that third option, then you're going to try and do that. If you, to Ezzy's point, if you can somehow finagle Adam Lowry to wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sign this contract at a later time, you know, add some versatility there, I think that's also a good thing. But you know what? It's a very good question. And you have a guy in Mason Appleton who, to, you know, Kenny spoke about it when we first started the show and we had him on. He's a guy who left college early. He was going to be the captain at Michigan State. And when he started with the Manitoba Moose, he was on the fourth line. And he worked his way up. And he worked extraordinarily hard. Obviously, AHL Rookie of the Year, 66 points. He was on a very deep Manitoba team. But, I mean, talk about like a diamond in the rough, right? Another late draft pick that the Jets have managed to turn into something. And again, not the Jets. I mean, he himself has done it because he's put in the work. I shouldn't give the Jets credit because the players are the ones who have to do the work and do what they need to do to get that next level to their game. But it's an incredibly hard decision because, you know, Jansen Harkins is center and Paul Maurice has kept him as a center, which generally Paul Maurice hasn't done with players. I mean, Jack Rozovic's a perfect example. Jack Rozovic is a player who with the Manitoba Moose was, I would say, and I can't say it authoritatively because I didn't see all the American Hockey League teams because the Moose didn't play all the teams, especially the ones out east or Eastern United States, I should say. But Jack Rozovic was like the most dominant player in the AHL for the Moose and in the league. And that was at center. And then just before he got called up, the Moose moved him over to the wing. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting because he's been playing center for his entire time here. So clearly the Jets are thinking about putting him in the wing. And we've seen that traditionally with players that they generally go to the wing and Paul Maurice has a more of a veteran presence. Jansen Harkins though, he's kept at center at times. And so to me, that's an interesting move, but you've also got to factor in, you've got David Gustafson in the wings and David Gustafson to me is a phenomenal young talent. I think he should be with the Moose right now. Personally, I don't think he's serving him any good to be with the taxi squad. If you're not playing him, you got to send him down to the Moose. He'll be playing big minutes. And I just think there's just too much value to his development. I'm getting a little off tangent, but I don't really care because I think it's an important thing to say. But you also have to factor that in, right? So again, general managers tend to value centers over wingers. And you have to look at what you have in the kind of development roster. So could you replace Jansen Harkins, who, you know, is going to factor into your maybe third, fourth line center role with a David Gustafson, if need be, versus a Mason Appleton, who, again, you could, in theory, keep him in that sort of Lowry, with that Lowry pairing right now. So it's a very tough one. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to punt on the answer, Drew, but I think
that's why I asked the difficult questions.
No, I know. And I'm just trying to process it out for the listeners to give us their opinion and to, you know, have a conversation with you two. But I think there's good reasons for why you'd want to keep both players. I mean, personally, I think what you're seeing from Mason Appleton right now, and again, it's always about recency bias. Right now we're looking at what Mason Appleton's doing, you know, the 10 points to Jansen Harkins, zero. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, are you keeping the guy with 10 or are you keeping the guy with zero? But it's also opportunity, right? Like Jansen Harkin hasn't had the minutes that Mason Appleton has had.
And I was going to jump in here, Dave, and just say that, you know, you mentioned David Gustafson, who obviously the Jets have high hopes for. But the point is, guys, a couple of months ago, we weren't even talking about Mason Appleton in the context of the expansion draft. That's the point. He's always been a good player. I think we all agree that last year, you know, he was a good player. Didn't necessarily have the points, right? But this year we're seeing that his offensive game has taken that next step. So that's the point for me, is that the fact that he's just in the conversation, he has forced himself there, right? Like, like you said, he has played so well, you know, that he's there. Another few things to factor in: Paul Stastny's future is uncertain. I mean, this might be, you know, his last year with the Jets. We don't know that. And also, you know, Cole Perfetti, we expect to play some games for the Jets next year, but he's going to play even more games in the 21-22 season. And the reason that's relevant is because, as Dave mentioned, Harkins is a natural center. So if the Jets envision him as possibly playing some minutes as a center, then you're going to have a bit of a logjam there, right? With Perfetti and with you're going to have David Gustafson in the picture. So I'm not sure at the end of the day, but that's why this is so fascinating, because, you know, it seemed like maybe 3 or 4 months ago that, you know, the expansion draft wasn't going to be that intriguing for the Jets, because we basically know who they're going to protect at forward, who they're going to protect on defense. And obviously Hellebuck is the goalie that's going to be protected. But I think with Appleton and Harkins, if one of those guys is exposed, guys, especially because of their contract, and there isn't a deal worked out, absolutely the Seattle Kraken are going to take one of those guys. You don't think they'd love to have one of those guys on their second or third line, you know, making $700,000 or $900,000 a year?
Let me throw this name out here. So we're talking about the forwards, and obviously there's a divide here, and not a difference of opinion, but it's a difficult question. And I'm looking at the YouTube chat, and there's a lot of opinions for Harkins, and there's a lot for Appleton, and same on our Twitter feed, undoubtedly. But let me ask you guys this question. I mean, at the beginning of the year, again, it seemed pretty clear on the back end, you're going to protect three defensemen, and you thought that the three defensemen were going to be, of course, Morrissey, Pionk, and DeMello. Could you make an argument? Could you foresee a scenario where it's not DeMello being protected by the Jets, but rather it's Logan Stanley, given that he has come into the lineup and performed, I'm going to say, admirably, especially for a guy who really didn't have a lot of expectations on him? DeMello is playing better. He has struggled, but could you foresee a situation where Stanley gets protected ahead of DeMello?
It's possible, right? And none of us expected Stanley to play this many games so early on. We expected him to maybe come in and, you know, play some games due to injury, but we certainly didn't expect it to be this many games and so early. So absolutely, I think there's no doubt that Morrissey and Pionk are going to be 1-2. And yeah, sure, DeMello, his game maybe hasn't been where it was last year when he first came over from Ottawa. But yes, Drew, you know, I already answered it, but there is absolutely a chance that Stanley could be protected. I don't think you want to lose him for nothing. But again, it goes back to, you know, our deal is going to be worked out so that the Seattle Kraken don't take Logan Stanley, or they don't take Jansen Harkins or Mason Appleton. We don't know that right now. But it's a good question that you raise, because if Stanley, I believe, didn't have those games played for the Jets this year, I don't think the Jets would have had to expose him. I might be wrong about that.
Well, no, it had nothing to do with the games that he was playing, the games that he played. It's just a matter of where he was at in his contract year and you know, the contract status. Dave, I mean, you've seen Stanley probably more than anybody in Winnipeg, given how much time you spent covering the Moose. And that's, of course, where he played, you know, for the, you know, the bulk of the last couple of seasons. You know, could you, you know, given what you've seen of him historically, given what you've seen of him this year, albeit in sheltered minutes, but it does seem that Logan Stanley has a viable NHL future, and given his size, would certainly be an attractive asset for a team to get for basically nothing. So how would you sort of balance the Stanley versus DeMello argument as we sit here on the 20th of February?
You know, I think it's an excellent question, Drew. And I think, you know, when Dylan DeMello signed that deal, everybody in Winnipeg was quite happy, because here's a player who they acquired through trade. He looked, you know, very good in that settling down that defensive core, helping to settle down that defensive core last season. And again, we've talked about it, I don't know how many times, where people have said, is Logan Stanley a bust? Is Logan Stanley a bust? And I said, guys, just because a player plays in the AHL doesn't make him a bust. And we had, I mean, we don't do call-in shows, or we didn't traditionally do call-in shows very much, but remember people asked in our last one saying, you know, is he a bust? And I said, well, if he, you know, a guy who could play second pairing, third pairing consistently for you for the next 10 years is considered a bust, then yeah, I guess if he's not a first pairing guy, he could be. But I mean, again, he's a guy who, and that's the one thing we live in, you know, you quoted me earlier. We live in such an instant gratification society that if a guy isn't doing X by Y, then somehow he's not doing what he needs to be doing. And look, Jansen Harkins would have been written off and nobody would even be talking about Jansen Harkins, because when he went to the ECHL, nobody was talking about him. Nobody was talking about Jansen Harkins before, when he wasn't really doing much and he was in and out of the Moose lineup. Then Jansen Harkins reels off 31 points in 31 games for the Manitoba Moose. You know, just looks like a completely different player. Although interestingly, when I talked to him about it, he really didn't change things up, but he's just a hard worker and he just works his tail off and he's focused. Logan Stanley is a guy who dedicated himself, and we talked about it. We've already talked about it on the program. He's a guy who worked his butt off to really take what they were telling him and take it to heart and do what he needed to do to get to that next level. So to me, I think that Stanley is definitely a player that you're going to want to focus on. I mean, again, I, to Ezzie's point, I didn't anticipate that he would come in and play as many games as he has. I thought, okay, you're going to see a guy who's going to get, you know, a handful of games throughout the course of the year. I anticipated Ville Heinola really getting those minutes, not Logan Stanley. I was wrong, but yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely a player that you're looking at. So, you know, long answer, Drew. I think the Jets have, and I think Ezzie said it, and I think he's right. I think the Jets have given themselves, these players have given the Jets some tough decisions to make. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because no, it forces the organization to take a look at it and say, okay, we've got players who can, again, because you can't look at it from what are they doing for us? Mason Appleton, you know, has 10 points. Jansen Harkins is zero. You can't just look at what's happening right now. You have to look at what your organization is going to look like 2, 3, 4 years down the road, because that's where you're looking at the impact of these guys.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's going to be so interesting to see, you know, what happens with the defense, because I think, you know, looking at the next couple of years, what's working against Logan Stanley is, you just mentioned, Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg are both left shot defensemen. Now, yes, all three of these guys could play their offside. That's not what it's about. But the point is, you know, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, and Dylan DeMello are all going to be, or are already signed long-term, right? Pionk is the only guy that isn't signed long-term, but we expect him to be signed to, you know, let's say 5 years, 4 years, right? Could be longer.
For the record, I want to interrupt you for a second. I believe that, you know, with Pionk coming up at RFA status, I think he's going to get 7 or 8 years from the Jets. If he keeps performing at this level this season, I'm not sure why it's not a Morrissey-esque, you know, 7-8 year deal, given everything that we've seen from him for the past two seasons. I think the body of work is there enough to sign him to longer than 3 or 4 years. And I think it's going to be closer to 6, 7, you know, it could be 8 even, but that's just me. I just wanted to put that on the record, put it on the board, so you can go back and say you heard it here first on February 20th on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, it's possible he gets something more long-term, like 6 or 7 years, but I think you have to look at, where is the room going to be for all these defensemen, right? Because Nathan Beaulieu is a guy that's not, doesn't factor in, you know, long-term for the Jets, but Logan Stanley, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg do. So, you know, again, these are all good problems to have for Jets management and the Jets coaching staff. But when you're making decisions for the expansion draft, I mean, obviously Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg don't have to be protected for the expansion draft, but you know, these are guys that they hope are going to be top four defensemen, or at the very least are going to be top six defensemen, right? So when you add it all up, right, with Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Dylan DeMello, Logan Stanley, I mean, there's only 6 spots in your regular rotation for defensemen, right? So that's what I do think is working a little bit against Logan Stanley. Not saying that he doesn't have a future for the Jets, but I don't know if that future is necessarily in a top role. It's probably going to be a third pairing role, especially when you consider that Ville Heinola is a slam dunk to be in your top four.
Let me ask you guys this question. So when the Golden Knights came into the NHL, the Jets did make that trade in order to have them select Thorburn. And if I recall correctly, the trade was a swap of first round places, meaning the Golden Knights would move up in the first round and the Jets would move back. And I believe the Jets also threw in a third round pick, if I'm not mistaken, in a later year's draft. how much would you give up to the Kraken in order to have them select a player that is, I'm going to say, you know, not one of the guys you're excited to lose. So Dave, why don't you handle that one first? Are you giving up a second round pick? Are you giving up that swap of first round picks? What are you doing? You know, how much incentive are you adding to make it be that the Kraken don't take one of your desired players?
Well, I mean, and again, like I said, to me, it's all about what do you have to replace that player? So do you have the pieces? I mean, again, we've seen in the NHL the importance of depth in organizations. Now, I've always been a proponent of not rushing players. So while the Jets do have a lot of good draft prospects in defensive prospects with the Moose, you know, aside from Ville Heinola, I don't know that any of those guys, you know, maybe Johnny Kovacevic, who's a little bit of an older guy, but like those are guys you generally don't want to be rushed into the NHL. So, you know, maybe Dylan Sandberg again, who's a guy who needed some time in the AHL, he can get that opportunity. But again, it becomes a function of what do you have in front of those players? You look at your current depth, right? And you're thinking to yourself, okay, can we afford to lose player A or player B? Well, let's say in this instance, Harkins, Appleton, and Stanley. And if we can we replace them? And again, I think to that point, Christian Vesalainen is a good guy who, you know, is really done. He did a lot with Liga. He's a guy who is going to earn himself, I think, a more regular role with the Winnipeg Jets. He has the size. He has the shot. He's putting some things together. So to me, here's a guy who could pop in and play on the wing if you lose Appleton. I'm just, you know, just spitballing those replacements because that's what you're really trying to factor in. Again, I've already gone over the Harkins one. If you don't have Harkins, David Gustafson to me. I mean, this is a guy who is built like a man. We always talk about players having to fill into their, you know, body to mature. David Gustafson is mature. This is a guy who is already, I mean, I'm saying that somewhat sarcastically because he'll still get more mature. But the reality is he's already physically ready to handle the grind of the NHL. And Logan Stanley, another guy who we talk about, who has come in this season in phenomenal shape. Obviously, his game is at a next level that he's able to do it. So you've got Logan Stanley. So to your point, Drew, with the three defensemen you're thinking about protecting, right? Let's say you go with Pionk, Morrissey, and DeMello. Don't you want, and you've got Heinola, to Eddie's point, you're going to have Heinola there as well. So those are really going to be your four guys. Do you see Stanley being in that, and do you want to protect him? And if you don't, who is that replacement, right? Who is that guy from that next level? Are you going to have to rush a guy like a Dylan Sandberg? Not rush, you know what I mean, but like move him up, perhaps a little bit
accelerate.
Faster. Accelerate it. Are you going to have to do that? So these are all the things that get factored in. So to me, yeah, I mean, if you're going to say, can you get a draft pick to save your franchise, like not save it, but preserve your franchise, you do it. Because the truth is, and again, we've talked about this for however long, the Jets have to win now, right? The Jets have to win, not literally this year, but within the next 2-3 years. That's what that forward group is built for. The defensive group, not so much, right? It's kind of like what it was a few years ago where their forwards were young. Now that defensive group is younger, but the truth is you really don't want to give up too much from this roster because you're trying to win right now.
Yeah, getting away from the expansion draft for a second, I think one of the biggest stories for this Jets team early on has been kind of the unexpected rise of players like Mason Appleton and Logan Stanley, at least for me it is. Because I think, you know, we knew that, you know, Patrick Laine was going to be a player to watch because of that hanging over the team that he could always be traded. And we knew that Jansen Harkins was going to be a player, you know, who had a good chance of taking that next step. Andrew Kopdave is another player that we thought, you know, because we knew that he wanted to play second line center, he was going to be a guy, you know, to watch. But Mason Appleton, Logan Stanley, players drafted by the Jets, we didn't necessarily see this coming. At least, you know, I think the three of us didn't see this coming. The Jets, you know, management and the coaching staff, you know, might have seen a little bit more of an offensive uptick for a player like Appleton and might have thought a little bit maybe more highly of Logan Stanley. Certainly Pascal Vincent thinks very highly of Logan Stanley, but I think that has been a story because, you know, Dubois didn't play for 2 weeks and he's now missed four games in a row. So players like Andrew Kopp, players like Mason Appleton, they have filled that void. For some of these players like Laine, and the reason why I'm saying Laine is because he was obviously traded and that void wasn't filled by Dubois in the lineup. And Logan Stanley, same thing. Tucker Pullman goes on the COVID-19 protocol list. Logan Stanley is the guy, not Ville Heinola or Dylan Sandberg, you know, that fills that void. So I think for me, that has been a big story. That when you look at that depth chart for the Jets, you know, Logan Stanley has to be further up on that depth chart. Like, he's a guy now that if one of your top six defensemen is injured, now you expect Logan Stanley, not Sammy Niku, to be the next guy that steps in.
Well, let me stop you right there. And you talk about Stanley and you talk about his performance. And, you know, this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors is champing at the bit to reopen. I can't stress that enough. They're not able to do so just yet. You know, they got to wait till they get to about, I think, 50% capacity is the benchmark they need to get to before they're going to be able to open the doors on a regular basis. But you can still support Rumors. You know, maybe you have a gift coming up, a gift buying opportunity, buy a gift card for your friend so they can redeem it at Rumors when they get the opportunity. There's probably going to be some more news coming about Rumors Zoom comedy nights. Whatever you need, whenever you need to laugh, be sure to check out rumorscomedyclub.com. So, sorry, Ezzy, I interrupted you there for a second there, but, you know, you talk about Logan Stanley, and from my perspective, I don't know why Nathan Beaulieu is playing above Logan Stanley in the Jets lineup at this point in time. Forget about Heinola and Sandberg, who are playing the big minutes with the Moose right now. And Dave, you'll talk about the Moose coming up here in a little bit and their four-game set against the Marlies this week. But to me, Logan Stanley should be playing above Nate Beaulieu. And I understood why you were playing Beaulieu for a while there. It was to get him enough games so that he met the criteria to be exposed in the expansion draft. But that has happened now. That's happened, I think, four or five games ago. So I'm not sure why it's Beaulieu over Stanley right now in the Winnipeg Jets lineup. And I got to be honest, if you had told me 3 months ago that this would be the argument I'd be making, I'd be very surprised about that. But that's, you know, Logan Stanley was solid for the Jets on the back end. And I think certainly as solid, if not better, than Nathan Beaulieu.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can make that argument, and I would probably put Stanley in over Beaulieu. I don't know in the grand scheme of things, if, you know, that's something I'm thinking about. It's not definitely keeping me up at night. But yeah, Logan Stanley.
Your kids are doing that for you.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I think, you know, Dave can speak to the way Ville Heinola has played in those four games for the Moose. But I think Heinola is a guy that the Jets coaching staff would probably like to see, you know, in the lineup sooner rather than later. So that's something to factor in. But yeah, I think Nathan Beaulieu has definitely struggled at times. And I realize that, you know, he's playing with a different D partner in Dylan DeMello as opposed to, you know, Tucker Pullman right now. But I think you can make a strong argument that, you know, with Stanley healthy, with Beaulieu healthy, you know, he could be in there. And it's possible we see that tomorrow night in Vancouver, guys. And yes, it's something that we definitely didn't think we would be saying, you know, as recently as, you know, 6 weeks ago. But Stanley has forced himself into that conversation. He's bided his time. You know, he's come up through the Manitoba Moose system. But I think, Dave, we should be, you know, looking more at Ville Heinola and, you know, when we're going to see him in the Jets lineup, because I think you would agree that, you know, he's not going to spend the whole season with the Moose.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Dave, that leads us into, I guess, our Moose conversation for this week. The Moose obviously played the four games against the Toronto Marlies. They dropped the first two, but then they came back with two victories Thursday and then late yesterday afternoon to split the four-game series for the Moose. And obviously, I mean, there's almost nobody in Winnipeg who covers the Moose as prominently and as fulsomely as you do. So what were your thoughts on the Moose in these four games and your thoughts particularly on Ville Heinola, Cole Perfetti and Dylan Sandberg? And of course, you know, keep in mind, and maybe we should just clarify for the audience, of course, Sandberg playing on his off wing, yeah, playing on the right side, which is, I think, all the more impressive, given his performance this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was interesting because he asked to play on the right side. He told the coaching staff he would be willing to be the guy because he and Ville Heinola both were left side guys, but he offered to switch over to that right side. And you know, Ken made the point, and it's one I made earlier in the week. I mean, it's a pretty impressive thing for a guy who hasn't played a hockey game since March of last year to come into a pro game. And don't get me wrong, a lot of guys have been in the same boat. A lot of guys haven't played hockey since last March. So it's not as if Dylan Sandberg is alone on an island in that regard. But he's switching from college hockey to pro, and he really didn't look like he had missed a beat. Again, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some things he has to learn. But I thought it was extraordinarily impressive for him to be able to make that transition to the right side, to look really good doing it. And again, to play that kind of quiet game, because Ken's right. Like, Ville Heinola is a guy, and, you know, we often talk about it at the AHL because it's a lot less crispy than what you expect at the NHL. The passing isn't the same. It's just never, guys aren't necessarily positioned where they should be. In the NHL, you can generally default to say, okay, there's an expectation. If I go this way, that guy's going to be there. In the AHL, that's not always the case. And that's not to say that these guys are bad. It's just not the NHL. And so that's just the reality of that game. And I think Heinola has looked like a guy who just has an unbelievable amount of talent. But the truth is, he wasn't getting used. So to me, the better value for Ville Heinola was to be at least playing games with the Moose. The Moose have played 4 games this week. That's a lot of hockey, right? So he played 4 games in 5 nights. Not something we regularly see. Mikael Burden actually played all 4 games. He was pretty good in the last 2. I think he made something like 80 something stops in the last 2 games. He was excellent, and he made it the save of the year candidate in my mind in game 1.
Yeah, sticking the paddle out.
Yeah, that was phenomenal. But, you know, getting back to the defenseman and what the Moose were able to do. I mean, look, the reality is wins and losses aren't going to be significant this season. That's not a big factor right now. The important part is the development. Now, everybody wants to win at the end of the day. When the final buzzer goes, you want to have won that game. But really, it's, are you getting your prospects that opportunity? And look, I mean, the fact is, and I mentioned it earlier, you have 5 defensive prospects in either their rookie or second year who are playing for the Manitoba Moose. And it would be 6 if Luke Green was healthy, but he's out right now with an injury. So you've got these young guys, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, Declan Chisholm in his rookie season, Leon Gavanke, and Johnny Kovacevic. So you have 5 defensive prospects who are regularly playing. Again, Kovacevic got a suspension for a cross-checking that he committed on Tuesday, so he didn't play the games on Thursday and Friday. But you have 5 defensemen who are playing pretty big minutes and pretty big opportunities for the Manitoba Moose. And that, to me, is ideal, because clearly they weren't seeing that with the Winnipeg Jets. They weren't going to get that opportunity. So I just think that there is such a big value for these young guys to be playing in all of these minutes. And, you know, you talk to Pascal Vincent, and that's what he'll say. He says, what are we here for? We're here for development. We're here for these guys to get to that next level. We're a feeder system for the Winnipeg Jets. Now, Pascal Vincent is a coach who wants to win as much as any coach. Trust me, he's not sitting there going, I'm happy to lose, you know, however many games they're going to play, let's say 25 games this season, 24 games. He doesn't want to lose going 0-24, but know that he's developed players. He's a guy who wants to win every single game, but he also knows what is the modus operandi, what is the mantra of the Manitoba Moose, and that is to develop these young players. So he's put Cole Perfetti into a position of success. He put him, you know, in his first game, he played him as the 4th line center, but they went 11-7 for the first 2 games. So he's put him in that position, and then he moved him up to a line with Christian Reichel and CJ Cease. And Christian Reichel and CJ Cease, obviously CJ Cease is a draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets. Folks know him here. He's a hardworking guy, 200-foot guy. Christian Reichel is a guy who earned an NHL contract with the Winnipeg Jets this last summer. He is a guy, I said it, he doesn't take a shift off. He's a really hard worker, got rewarded with a goal this week. But they put Perfetti on a line with these 2 guys. So then you have Perfetti playing center with 2 competent, responsible wingers. And that only can serve him well, because to Ezzie's point, or I think Weber actually said it, sorry, earlier, people wanted Perfetti to be playing in the NHL. Well, he's not ready to play in the NHL, but he is
he's going to be there soon.
He is. And he's an exceptionally smart young man. Like, I watched him in his first pro game. And of course he scores in his first pro game, but I watched him and so did Declan Chisholm on a real nice shot from the point. But and he joked afterwards because it was screened, but essentially he said, you know, they don't ask how it went in, just that it went in. But you watched Cole Perfetti, and an exceptionally smart, high IQ, has great vision, just needs that maturity to play a man's game, because it is a man's game. So that's the element in his game that's lacking. And again, it will get there. And here's another guy who obviously played high level at the World Juniors, but had to do a lot of quarantining. So at least now he's getting that opportunity, right? He wasn't in the Jets training camp. So you could somewhat sense that he wasn't going to get that opportunity with the Jets. He's going to get it with the Moose, and it's important. And so that to me is the biggest focus. It's the wins and the losses. Yeah, okay, people will focus on that. But the reality is, what happened with Mikael Burton this week? What happened with Dylan Sandberg this week? What happened with Declan Chisholm? All of these draft picks got opportunity in this system to play games. And that's why, to me, a guy like David Gustafson is so critical to be off that taxi squad, because he's not playing games for the Winnipeg Jets right now. Get him off the taxi squad. Send him to the Moose. They're going to Laval next week. Play four games against Laval. We don't know what the Moose schedule is like yet for March, but the fact is, get these guys playing, because look, you can benefit. And I've talked to Dave Gustafson about it. Talked to Cole Perfetti about it. These guys benefit from learning, playing with pro, learning how to stay. Like we talked about it, as he talked about it, staying on the ice after a practice and watching what Adam Lowry does. There's huge value to that. And Cole Perfetti talked about talking to Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, picking their brains. And you know, these guys are learning, but at the end of the day, it's always good to learn in school, but you have to go into the real world and put that, what you've learned, to the test. And that's why playing with, you know, 22 minutes with the Moose is going to be so critical for these guys this year.
And while we're talking about the Moose guys, we have to talk about our good friend of the show, Eric Comrie, getting claimed by the organization, because even though you guys know I love my Devils, you know, Comrie just, he has to be a member of the Jets organization. So we got to give him a shout out. Great to see him.
By NHL rule at this point in time.
I think someone
can
on
leave,
our...
but he can leave, but he got to come back. It's like Hotel California. You can leave, but you can never leave.
Someone on our Instagram was saying his nickname should be Boomerang, because he always comes back.
No, I love it. Yeah. I have no problem with that nickname. I like it. And it just gives the Jets, you know, it makes sense for him to be on the taxi squad. So, you know, it's just overall good news. That was probably some of the best news that I saw this week.
We're going to begin to wrap it up. I want to talk about Christian Vesalainen before we do that, though. Vesalainen obviously wasn't in the game last night. Nate Thompson got the call instead of Vesalainen. You know, to me,
for his PK minutes, but he didn't pay any PK minutes.
That's right. So the argument was that, you know, Paul Maurice wanted to put Thompson.
He was good on faceoffs. I think he was 67-68% or something like that.
Right. And I heard Paul Maurice's, you know, argument before the game, and I heard his comments post game, you know, justifying the move. But to me, and I understand that, you know, Paul Maurice's job is to win games. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, that, and then we talked about this with Ken a couple hours ago. To me, Christian Vesalainen needs to be, you know, a regular in the Jets lineup most every night, even if it's on that fourth line role. And particularly given how he played the last few games, I thought he was beginning to affirm himself as that regular. Same with Logan Stanley when he got taken out of the lineup, and Beaulieu was left in. I just don't understand the logic at this point, where you can't use Vesalainen and you can't use Stanley in sheltered minutes, and instead you're using Thompson and you're using Beaulieu. I just don't know where Vesalainen's ever going to get that development to the next level if he's not in there on a regular basis, so that he knows that he can get some consistency and that he knows he can play the game and he's not always looking over his shoulder. You know, because if you're Vesalainen, and you're thinking, if I make one mistake, I'm going to be out of the lineup. That's a lot of pressure, and that's a real difficult position to play yourself in. And I note that Jansen Harkins, remember, last year, he had that mistake late in the game against the Oilers in Edmonton. It was a Saturday night game. The Jets ended up losing. It was a function of, I mean, Dreisaitl, I think, took advantage of a younger player in Harkins. And Maurice kept Harkins in the lineup going forward, which I thought was a big vote of confidence. I think it's time that the Jets do the same, particularly with Christian Vesalainen on that fourth line.
Well, look at the game tomorrow night. It's going to be very telling. You have Pierre-Luc Dubois, who could possibly, obviously what happens at practice later this afternoon is going to determine whether he plays tomorrow, but you're going to have two players now that you want to get into the lineup, Vesalainen and Dubois. So obviously Nate Thompson, just because he was the last player to go back into the lineup, would be the obvious one there if Pierre-Luc Dubois comes out. But you wonder, you know, if Dubois comes back, is there a chance that Vesalainen comes in, and who that player is going to be? Weber mentioned this, and I agree with him 100%. Like, Vesalainen, Jansen Harkins, Trevor Lewis, like, I have time for that line. I think they didn't get a lot of ice time. I think they were each around, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, in that game against the Oilers. But, you know, I can see that line, you know, having, you know, some offensive upside. But also, you know, you have Vesalainen on a line maybe with Mason Appleton and Adam Lowry. Look, Drew, there's no doubt that Vesalainen at 21 years old has got to play games. He has to play games. He can't, you know, be sitting out for extended periods of time, whether that's, you know, 4 days, 5 days, or 2 weeks. So yeah, I would have Vesalainen in the lineup if I can. You know, there's a logjam right now. We mentioned that on defense. There's a logjam at forward, right? Like, you got to have Jansen Harkins in the lineup. You obviously have to have Mason Appleton in the lineup. So, you know, would you take out a guy like Trevor Lewis to get Vesalainen into the lineup? I don't know, because Lewis has been very effective in a penalty killing role, right? So, yeah. You know, I'll say this much. I'll leave it and give Dave the last word here. You know, I think you do have to find a way to get Vesalainen in there.
Yeah, and I think to answer your, if you ask Paul Maurice, essentially what he said was that you need a player who does two things, right? And he's essentially saying that Vesalainen isn't a guy he can throw on the PK at this point, and or the PP, and as a result, he's not going to be that guy who's going to stay in the lineup as a result of that. So that, I mean, that's what Paul Maurice's justification was. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it is obviously everybody else's prerogative. But that's just what, if people are going to say, what is the reason why you have Nate Thompson in? I mean, and again, we know how the Jets coach tends to default to veterans versus younger players. So, I mean, there's that. But Drew, I think you make a valid point. I mean, again, so send Vesalainen to the Moose. He doesn't have to pass through waivers. Let him play minutes. Because, again, he's not going to get any better. Like, one of the best lines last year for the Manitoba Moose to end the season for the last 10 games, obviously before the pause, was Christian Vesalainen, David Gustafson, and Christian Reichel. They were really good together. They played 10 games together. And again, you know, having that ability to allow even Cole Perfetti to move down and not have any sort of pressure, face the other team's top players, that could be a benefit to him. But again, if you're not playing these guys, don't waste them on the tax squad. Paul Maurice talked about that in training camp. Said, I don't have an intention of keeping young players on the taxi squad. Well, he's at a point close, at least in my mind, with David Gustafson, that you're wasting time with him. Because, again, I get that there's a value to training with these players. But they have to, again, like I use that analogy of school. You've taught them in school. Let them go into the real world and show that they can do it. And David Gustafson is a guy who I think absolutely needs to play minutes. And Christian Vesalainen is the same thing. If you're not going to play him in the NHL, if you think that he still has elements of his game, like Paul Maurice has been highly complimentary of Christian Vesalainen. He's talked very positively about him. But if you don't have the confidence to put him in your lineup, then send him to the Manitoba Moose. Let him play with the Manitoba Moose. And when you have a spot for him, bring him up and play him. Because the yo-yoing is just... I don't think, look, Ken was right in one element. You have to earn your spot. But again, it's difficult to your point, A, with the limited number of minutes that they were playing, and B, you know, that idea of like, okay, well, am I going to just lose my job because a veteran's available who could do more than what I'm able to do? Well, okay, well then send him to the Moose. And guess what? Pascal Vincent played Christian Vesalainen on the penalty kill last year. I want to say, I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I'm fairly certain he played on the penalty kill last year for the Manitoba Moose. David Gustafson for sure did. I think Christian Vesalainen did as well. So let him go and learn that element. Let him go and develop that with the Manitoba Moose. If that's your position and you're the head coach, you're the one who has to make the decision, because at the end of the day, it's your head on the line if you're going to keep your job or lose your job. So you have to make a decision that you're confident in. But if you're going to make that decision, I'm the general manager, I'm saying that's fine. But we've got other guys who can sit on the taxi squad who don't need to spend time developing. Christian Vesalainen isn't one of them. So again, I've been as vocal as anybody who would say you don't waste development years not playing games. And before the Moose were back, I understood it. That's why when people would come at me with, well, Paul Maurice said this, I said, look, the Moose aren't playing. So if he can practice with the Jets or practice with the Moose, practice them with the Jets. It's better for his development. But the Moose are back. They're playing games. They played four this week. That's a lot better than sitting in the press box, although they don't sit in the press box anymore.
And with that soliloquy, I can't end the show any better than that. Dave Manouk laying down the law to wrap up this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want to thank everybody who tuned in on YouTube. And remember, each and every Saturday, we're going to be live on our YouTube channel, Illegal Curve Radio. You can search for that. Search for Illegal Curve Hockey as well. Remember to smash that subscribe button. You'll be notified each and every time we go live. And of course, our YouTube channel has all of the latest Winnipeg Jets video that we post, particularly the pre and post game Zoom calls. You can find it all on our YouTube channel as well as illegalcurve.com. We want to say thank you to the guests who joined us on today's show, Ken Weeb of Sportsnet, our good buddy Gary Lawless, and Anthony Sanfilippo. In case you missed any of the show, it just hit the subscribe button and get the podcast sent to you automatically each and every Saturday. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thanks to Ezra Ginsberg. He's coming towards the light based on the sun that's shining in there. To Dave Manouk, I am your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks so much for joining us. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.